Translation of Prabhupada by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki, therefore you should be kind towards by showing me complete mercy. I desire to have sons, and I am much distressed by seeing the opulence of my co-wives. By performing this act, you will become happy. Purport: in Bhagavad Gita, sexual intercourse for begetting children is accepted as righteousness. A person sexually inclined for simple sense gratification, however, is unrighteous. In Diti's appeal to her husband for sex, it was not exactly that she was afflicted by sex desires, but she desired sons. Since she had no sons, she felt poorer than her co-wives. Therefore, Kashyapa was supposed to satisfy his bona fide wife. So, before beginning with this class, I would like to seek the blessings of all the senior assembled Vaishnavas. So, it's a very interesting topic today because we are going to discuss about one of the most important aspects of Grihastha Ashram, and also we can say what kind of relationships normally we have as per the Vedic scriptures. And the best ashram, when I was thinking about this verse, the best example of Grihastha Ashram is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Because even with 16,108 wives, he just played the role of a Grihastha perfectly. And sometimes people are just blown away by the numbers, right? Because I remember when I used to do service for School of Bhakti, that time College of Vedic Studies, we were sitting in an Ayurvedic seminar and somebody had come to the temple for the first time. And somehow a discussion led to, you know, this fact that the Supreme Personality had 16,108 wives. And one of the person was just blown away, like he couldn't speak afterwards. But at the same time, we should understand that this picture is actually depicting the same thing. That's the same personality, which is partial expansion. Just out of his breathing, he is creating infinite universes. So everything is possible for me. My Guru Maharaj will often give this example that a person who is driving car is stopping in front of a red light. He's waiting for the green signal to move forward. And then suddenly he sees a airplane flying by. And he is like asking his co-passenger that, oh, it's a red light. Why isn't the plane stopping, you know? Because the plane has a different set of regulations. The plane has a different capacity. So if a car has to stop in front of the red light, that doesn't mean that the plane also has to stop. Similarly, we often, people, when they hear these facts about the Supreme Personality, they are blown away. But we don't need to see from a human perspective, but he's the Supreme Personality of God himself, so yeah, it's possible. And we get lot of examples from the scriptures where Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, Sri Krishna, has actually shown this, how he has performed this Grihastha Dharma such a nice way. Because for one of the examples, in one of the versions of the Mahabharata, it says that when Ashwatthama has released his Brahmastra, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is protecting him in the womb, and even though Parikshit took birth, he came as without life, like he came unconscious. So then the Supreme Personality says that if I have followed the life of a Grihastha perfectly, if I have followed my Dhamma of being Grihastha perfectly, then this child should live. And then immediately Parikshit Maharaj actually starts breathing and he's alive again. So Supreme Personality has shown this example of how we can lead a perfect Grihastha life. So today's verse actually is, I felt this verse we can actually discuss about relationships and how relationships and different modes can lead to different results. And this verse today is actually a perfect example of a relationship which is in the mode of passion. So you can see that when Diti is speaking to her husband, Kashyap Muni, she is saying that Tad bhavam dahyamanayam. Dahyamanayam means that I'm very much distressed, you know. I'm getting so much distress. Because what's the reason of your distress? Sa patni nam samriddhi bhi. My co-wives, when I see their samriddhi, when I see their prosperity, when I see their well-being, their happiness, I feel very distressed. So somehow in this verse you can feel that there's a sense of competition, there's a sense of, you know, like comparison. So he's saying, sa patni nam, when I see my co-wives, when I see my other co-wives, I see they are so prosperous, they're so happy, they're so jubilant because they have sons, they have progeny. And that's why I feel dahyamanam, I feel my body's. Dahya means normally dahya, the word, meaning of the word dahya also means to fire or to light fire. So I feel very distressed because I see my co-wives, their samriddhi, their prosperity. And that's why I also want to have progeny. So this verse kind of, as I said, it's somehow I felt is in the mode of passion, because Bhagavad Gita often says that in the 14th chapter, 12th verse of the Bhagavad Gita, it says, Lobha pravritti arambha karmanam asambha spraha rajasi etani jayate vivriddhe bhartashabha. So the translation says, O chief of the Bharatas, when there's an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, fruitive activities, and listen carefully, intense endeavor, and uncontrollable desire and hankering develop. So you can see in this example that Diti was, completely consumed in the mode of passion because she has intense desire, she has uncontrollable desire and an intense hankering. And at the same time, there's a sense of competition, there's a sense of comparison, and oh, how my co-wives are actually doing so well, but I don't have any progeny, any sons. And she's actually not, and as you will go move forward in the Bhagavatam, move forward in this the coming slokas, you will see that because the desire was just uncontrolled and intense hankering was there, so the result of that hankering, because she went to her husband, and as the duty of a husband, he must fulfill the desires of his wife. So he actually fulfilled her desire, and the result was misery, because the most powerful demoniac sons were born. Because she had approached her husband at a wrong time, she had approached her husband when he was doing his Sandhya Aarti, and even her husband has told her, like, look, wait for this time, because it's not an auspicious moment. But still, because of the intense hankering, the intense desire, she went forward, and then the result of that was misery. In Bhagavad Gita 14.16, it says, Rajasas tu phalam dukkham. Action done in the mode of passion results in misery. And you can see that the sons who were born were actually very violent. They were totally opposed to Sanatana Dharma, to the Vedic culture, because they used to take pride in actually, you can say, killing and harassing the Brahmanas, destroying Vedic rituals. So the action done in mode of passion results in misery, a lot of misery. And of course, we can always say that it was part of the bigger Leela, because Lord wanted to enjoy that Veera Rasa, but still, because Diti had actually approached, or she was in that mode of passion when she approached her husband, the result was just misery and pain and difficulty. But the same Bhagavad Gita in 14 chapter 6 verse says, Tatra sattvam nirmalat Prakashanam Anamayam. So relationship in the mode of goodness, being purer than the others, is illuminating and it frees one from all sinful reactions. But we see that if the same relationship is not in the mode of passion, there's not a sense of competition, there's not a sense of I want to actually fulfill my desires first, but there's a sense of serving, there's a sense of gratitude, and there's a sense of serving your partner, the result is it's illuminating and it frees one from all sinful reactions. And the classic example for me, I mean, when I was thinking about this verse, is the pastime of Kardam Muni and Devahuti. Because and as the Bhagavad Gita says that the result is actually it frees one from all sinful reactions. Prakashyam Anamayam. Anamayam means without any sinful reactions. And you can see that example from Srimad Bhagavatam, because son of Devahuti was Kapila Muni, who brought the Sankhya Yoga philosophy. And we'll just see now that how the same situation, Diti is also desiring, she also has a desire. She has a desire to have progeny, she wants family, she wants a son. And Devahuti also had the same desire. She also wanted progeny, she also wanted a son. But her approach to this situation is just so different as compared to Diti. So a little background on Devahuti and Kardam Muni, because Devahuti was actually a princess. She was the son of she was the daughter of a great king, Manu Maharaj, and she had, we can say, when she heard the qualities of Kardam Muni, she wanted this desire to actually marry Kardam Muni. And Kardam Muni, you can just imagine. She's a princess, she's living in this royal palace, thousands and thousands of servants, intense opulence, army, palaces, and Kardam Muni, he lives a very, very simple life. He's living on the bank of a river, he has a hut, he has matted hair, he puts on like tree barks and deer skin, and through the whole day he is just engaged, he is just busy in his sadhana, in his achaman, in reading, in doing yagnas. So Devahuti, she never thought that, oh, actually if I marry this person, how will he sustain me, you know. She just saw the intense quality. She just, in one of the verses it says that she saw her husband even more than the demigods, more powerful than the demigods. And that's why she never cared that actually my husband, he has nothing, like he's just a simple sadhu, he's a great, great devotee of the Lord, but he is living on the banks of a river, he has no material opulence. And she rightfully, she just accepted that aesthetic life. And she started serving her husband, helping him in all the activities, bringing water, arranging wood for the fire sacrifices with Kardam Muni was doing. And she just did this for a long period of time without never complaining about it, without never saying that, oh, I'm so tired, you know, I just can't, and I'm never thinking like, oh, where I've just got stuck, you know, like, why did I marry this guy, like, you know. My life just changed completely. I thought my life will be perfect. But now, see, I have to, you know, every day go and fetch water, like do all this, like house duty. I had 10 servants in my house. She never thought like that. She just beautifully obeyed the principles and just served her husband. And one day, while she is serving, it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, 23 verse, 23 chapter, third verse, it says, Visarjya kamam dhambam cha dvesham lobham agham madam. So working sanely and diligently, she pleased her very powerful husband, giving up, Visarjya kamam, giving up all lust dambham, pride, dvesham, envy. So in this verse we can always see that she is saying sa patninam samritibhi, the sense of envy, the sense of competition, but devahuti visarje dvesham. She left aside all the envy, all the competition, all the sense of comparison, lobham, greed, agham, madham, so sinful activities and vanity, and she just served her husband. She just served her husband continuously, and the Srimad Bhagavatam explains that as she was serving her husband, you know, she became very, very frail. She lost weight. Because she was taking bath in the river, her hair became matted. She was just wearing one sari for a long time. It was torn in different places. And one could never imagine that she was actually such a great princess, you know. Because now she was just like a sadhvi. She was just like a sadhu. Very simple, very pure. And just serving her husband intensely. And one day, and Kardama Muni was also, because he was such a great sage, he was such a saintly personality, he was just busy in his sadhana, in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he never noticed, actually my wife has become so frail now, you know. He was just completely engaged, but one day he suddenly saw her, and he just thought like, you know, when she came to me for the first time and I got married to her, she was so pretty, you know. She had such nice dress and she was just so beautiful. But now look at her, you know. She's been just serving me the whole time. And she has just lost so much weight, and her cheeks have become like frail. And he just had this, you can say, a lot of gratitude and a lot of kindness in his heart, that this lady, she has just served me without any, you can say, desire for in return. She just has been serving me. And one day, Kardama Muni says, this is the third canto, 23 verse, 6th verse, it says, Kardama Muni vacha tushto ham adya tava manavi manadeya. So he says, O great daughter of Manu Maharaj, Shushruhya Paramaya Paraya Cha Bhaktiya, I'm very much pleased by your great devotion. The kind of bhakti you have shown, the kind of devotion you have shown to serve me, I'm become very, very satisfied. Tustoham, I have become very, very satisfied. And then he says, Yo Dehinam Ayam Ativa Suhrid Sadeho, for all living entities, this body is very, very dear, you know. At the end of the day, in the material world, everybody is working for his body, whether it's he's taking food in time, he's drinking water, he's having good lifestyle, good balance of work and other things. Because everyone in the material world, the body is very, very important. But then Kardama Muni says, Na vekshitaha samuchitaha shapitum mad arthe. But I am so surprised that even though this body is so, so dear to every living entity in this world, but you have neglected your body for my own behalf. Just for serving me, just for, performing the dharma of a wife, you have completely neglected yourself, not taking food in time, serving, not putting on nice dress. You have been just serving me, and I can just see that you have completely neglected yourself. And then the same result happens, that Kardama Muni is actually very happy with her. Kardama Muni is very, very satisfied with her. And then Kardama Muni also says, okay, I'm going to fulfill her desires. So you can just see the stark difference, right? The verse we are discussing today, here, Diti is overcome by desire and she just can't take it anymore. There's a sense of competition, and she just approaches her husband and says, "Look, I'm not happy with the, you know, I'm getting distressed when I see the opulence of my co-wives. So I also want prosperity. I also want a son. But here, Devahuti ji is just serving her husband. She never says a word about what she wants. But Kardam Muni, being the saintly personality, being the tapasvi, he knows that what is the desire of his wife, and he actually fulfills the desire. So you can just see the stark difference that a relationship performed in the mode of passion, the results are also leading to misery, but the relationship in mode of goodness leads to knowledge, leads to happiness. And later on, Kapila Muni was born out of relationship, and who gave the philosophy of Sankhya. And he was the guru of his own mother. So Kapila Muni actually instructed his own mother, Devahuti also. So till now we kind of discussed about relationships in the mode of passion and relationship in the mode of goodness. But I just wanted to ask all the devotees present here that is it always so mathematical that, okay, if relationship is in the mode of passion, it will lead to this results. If relationships are in the mode of goodness, it will lead to different results. Is it always so mathematical? Any opinions, any thoughts?
Sometimes it's a mixture. You know, certainly when I relate to my previous life, to come to a celibate life was a dramatic change. And because I would say I was a womanizer, you know, but they used me. So you suffer because of that. And I had no sanity, I would say, with the mode of passion. But certainly there was a godsend, you know, a Krishna send, really. I met a Prabhupada disciple. And he asked me about chanting and Vedic astrology and all these things. He used to come down to the Isle of Wight with a visit of the Vedic society. And he would do astrological charts. And I found it very interesting. But one of the things he said, what is this human form of life meant for? And then he took me under his wing and showed me all sorts of things. He was very rich, actually. He had an original copy of, a book of Prabhupada, which was incomplete. But I'm very grateful to him. And I came in distress, certainly. I was in distress, so, you know. Keeping a relationship between man and woman, I speak to women and I speak to men, but I'm still keeping a celibate life, so it's a balance. But what do they say? There's some things that never leave you, and they never do, but you carry on and see what happens each day. You know? So it's a topsy-turvy world, but certainly for me. I feel myself fortunate, but it's the association of devotees that kept me going, and you know, the friendships here. So I can only thank them, really. It's a feeling of gratitude I have for Prabhupada, actually, as well. Mm. Okay.
Sorry. Thanks so much, Prajna Prabhu. That's wonderful. Yeah. Anybody else?
Hi, Krishna. Thank you. Very nice class, Prabhu. I was thinking about this thing of relationships and, I think for the relationship to be in the mode of goodness, both partners have to be in the mode of goodness. Because sometimes you get a situation where, Jai, Shishu Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai, Sitaram Lakshmananda Ki Jai. You know, we hear these stories from Bhagavatam. One example is Devahuti Kardama Muni. Another example is Sukanya and Chyavana Muni, where you had these women who were married and in difficult situations, right? Difficult relationship, where Chyavana Muni was, you know, old and grumpy and irritable and not very pleasant to live with. But then she served him very humbly and very submissively and with a lot of dedication. And then he had a change of heart, you know, and he changed himself in this beautiful, gallant young man, and he lived happily ever after. And then you have Devahuti, who, you know, it's not that her husband was irritable or grumpy, but he just kind of was a little negligent and, you know, absorbed in his stuff. And her life was very austere. And she just kept serving and serving. And then he also kind of had a realization one day that, oh, my wife is so nice, I should help her. So I know women in relationships that are difficult, and they just try to, you know, be submissive and be humble and keep serving, waiting, you know, for that transformation to take place where the husband's going to be like, what am I doing? I actually have a really nice wife. She helps me so much. I should stop mistreating her. I should stop neglecting her. I should try to, you know, like, help her to be happy. And it doesn't happen. So in that situation, it seems, and on the other hand, the opposite happens. He sees that when the wife is so, you know, dedicated and submissive and service, with a service attitude, he kind of exploits that more and more.
Yeah.
So then it becomes really oppressive for the wife. And yeah, it's, she may be trying her best and maybe mode of goodness, but if the husband is in the mode of passion or ignorance, then it doesn't work out well.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's such a beautiful point, that for the relationship to actually work, both of them has to be in the mode of goodness, otherwise it won't work. But when I was thinking about this, one other pastime came to my mind. This is actually still Diti and Kashyapa Muni, and this is relating to the birth of the Marutganas. So immediately after, when the sons of Diti, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, were killed, she was still in that mode of passion. She was still. So the background of this pastime is that she had, you know, her sons had been killed, and she had this very intense hatred, or can say, you know, anger towards Indra, and she decides that actually, you know, I need to take revenge. And then she does the same thing. She's approaching her husband. She's serving her very nicely. She's smilingly doing all the household duties, serving her husband perfectly. And one day, her husband Kashyapa Muni is very satisfied, and he thinks that, oh, actually my wife has been serving me so nicely. So he says, okay, what is your desire? I'll fulfill your desires. And then suddenly the thunderbolt strikes. So she says, I want a son who will kill Indra. And Kashyapa Muni, who is in the mode of passion, who is such a great devotee, he said, in the back of his mind, he thought, how can I allow that, you know? I can never allow this. But you'll see in this example that even though the relationship was in the mode of passion, but because there was devotional service involved in this relationship, so the result actually came out positive. Because Kashyapa Muni asked Diti during the birth of the Marutganas to perform something called the Pumsa Vanavrata. So in Pumsa Vanavrata, Diti was advised that she should, you know, perform certain activities, be cleanly, perform cleanliness, perform chanting, perform devotion service. And what had happened, that she had become pregnant, and her husband had told her that, keep yourself clean, follow all the regulations properly. If you follow the regulations properly, an enemy of Indra will be born. But if you don't follow the regulations properly, a friend of Indra will be born. And what had happened, one day she was following the regulations properly. She had performed the Pumsa Vanavrata for 1 year. But one day she ate something, and without washing her mouth and without washing her hands and her feet, she slept. And somehow the vrata the vrat was actually broken, because she was advised to actually clean herself every day and sleep with fresh clothes and stuff like that. But one day she forgot, and the result of that was Indra was actually able to enter her womb, and he even tried to kill the womb, you know. So he used his Indrastra and tried to kill. But because she had performed the vrata so nicely towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the child had become immortal. And then when, you can say, the birth happened and Diti saw Indra and her sons, she had a complete change of heart. So just because, even though she was in the mode of passion, but because she performed devotional service in such a nice way, she had followed, you know, devotional service for a period of 1 year, her heart, when she desired for this, she had an intense enmity towards Indra, but at the end of this vrata, she had just love for Indra. And she was saying, "Oh, my son Indra, how come you're here?" So this pastime happened in the 6th canto, 18th chapter, 66th verse. It says, Sakrit ishtavadi purusham purusho yati samyatam samvatsaram kinchit unam ditya yad dharir architaha. So it says, if one worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, even once, he receives the benefit of being promoted to the spiritual world and possessing the same bodily features of Vishnu. Diti worshipped Lord Vishnu for almost 1 year, adhering to a great vow. So you can see that Diti just performed this Pumsavana Vrata for 1 year, and there was such a transformation of heart. So even though she had enmity, even though she had a sense of, you can say, hurting Indra, but after this vrata, she had a complete transformation of her heart. So relationships might be in the mode of passion, relationships might be in the mode of goodness, but when the husband and wife consciously put Supreme Personality, Lord Sri Krishna, in the center, you can see the transformation can happen. So I think that was also one of the learnings we can take from this verse. But yeah. So thank you so much. That if any questions, any corrections, any further points, Prabhuji.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the class. I'm just looking at the last sentence of the purport. Prabhupada writes, therefore Kashyapa was supposed to satisfy his bona fide wife. So is this always the case, that a wife may come with a desire? The husband's duty is always to satisfy her with her desires, number one. And number two, we also find kshatriyas, if a woman approaches a kshatriya for marriage, then kshatriya is not allowed to refuse. Mm. So, yeah, how do we understand this? Because there may be various different desires, there may be different women who, for different reasons, may want to marry a kshatriya, and it may not be appropriate, it may not be righteous. So, yeah, if you can maybe say something on that.
I guess, yeah, it's very subjective. The role of a brahmana, dharma of a brahmana is completely different from a kshatriya. But I feel in all the examples in the Bhagavatam, there was always some service involved, because it might happen that in kshatriyas they actually, you know, it's the duty is to actually protect the kingdom, perform administrative duties for the kingdom, and when there's like a war, he's actually conquering like a new kingdom. So naturally it happens that he might get proposal from the opposite kingdom, like marry her and maintain her. But for a brahmana, I think in this case, because Diti was, as Srila Prabhupada says, his bona fide wife, and she had served him, she had been kind to him and she had been doing her duties, and therefore, even though she had approached him directly, but her, you can say, eligibility or her desire to actually, you can say, her approach was because she thought that, okay, I've served my husband and therefore I can actually ask for it. But yes, definitely, when it comes to Kshatriya, the dharma is different. And if the desire is only, oh, actually I saw somebody and I just got, you know, in his, you can say, when the Kshatriya is walking, his opulence, his army, his Veera Rasa, his strength, I'm just attracted by it. So, you know, I just want to marry this personality. I think in that case, it might be different. But we'll see in the Bhagavatam, when it came to Supreme Personality of Godhead, for example, Rukmini Ji had never met Sri Krishna before. She had only heard about him, that he's so beautiful, he's so brave, he's all the different pastimes, and she had got attracted to him. And that therefore, she just wrote a letter. But because it was a Supreme Personality of Godhead, so it's allowed. But I would say, if it's normally just in the mundane realm of attraction between a man and a woman, then definitely I think it's not advisable. But in this case, because they were already married and the wife had been serving her husband diligently, so that therefore Kadamuni thought that actually is my, you know, as Mataji spoke, like a change of heart happened, and he thought, yes, you have been serving me for a long time, so therefore I must satisfy my wife's desire. If that helps.
Could you have said no and it would have been fine?
I would say there have been situations like this where actually a no was better. And it's also subjective, because, for example, the example in Ramayana where Kekai had been serving, she had served Dashrata in the war, and Dashrata was just so pleased by the service of Kekai that he had said, ask me anything, you know. And you can see that because of that boon or that promise, Lord Ram was asked to actually go for 14 years in Vanvas. So it's subjective. At the same time, I would say, you know, it shouldn't be like it's my personal opinion that it shouldn't be like an open end, like just like how Dashrata, King Dashrath, just said, just ask me anything, I will desire, I'll fulfill any desires of yours. I think that's I would say is actually you know, say, out of bounds or out of the regulations. I mean, if she has served him, then yeah, I'll fulfill the duties. And as a husband, whatever I can do to help you, satisfy you, support you. At the same time, I think this one very interesting verse comes to my mind. It's from, I think, the fifth canto. So Rishabh Muni is saying that, Guru na sasyat, swajano na sasyat, pita na sasyat, janani na sasyat, devyam na sasyan, na patis na sasyan, na mochayat tat samupeta mrityam. So the meaning is, one shouldn't be a guru, one shouldn't be a relative, one shouldn't be a father, one shouldn't be a mother, one shouldn't be a pati or a husband, until and unless they help their dependents to actually get out of the cycle of birth and death, samupeta mrityam, the cycle of birth and death. So I guess, yes, the desire, the duty is to serve, the duty is to actually fulfill desires of all the people who are dependent on the person, whether it's the husband or the wife. But the desire should be actually fulfilled in such a way that their devotion towards Supreme Personality is increased and they're able to actually get out of the cycle of birth and death. So, yeah, I would say it's subjective. So it shouldn't be like a open-end question that, yes, ask me anything, what you want, I'm here to help you, I'll fulfill everything you want. It should be in the sense of service, it shouldn't be in the sense of devotion, it should be in the sense of helping them actually get out of the cycle of birth and death. That's my understanding.
Thank you, Prabhu. If it's okay, can I also ask another question?
Sure.
when does the living entity enter into a body? Because here we're saying they engaged at the wrong time, and therefore these horrific entities entered, right,
yeah,
into the womb. So, yeah, when does the living entity actually take shelter of a body?
So, I think I'm just speaking from my own, limited knowledge, but I'll just force quote the example of the Supreme Personality. So, I think the 10th canto speaks about how the Supreme Personality actually came in the mind of Vasudev Maharaj, and then he was transferred onto Devaki, Mother Devaki, and she had just become so opulent, she had just become so bright and so beautiful suddenly. So in that case, definitely there was no like physical transmission or physical, you can say, contact, because it was just the Supreme Personality had actually came to the mind of the husband and then to the wife, and then Supreme Personality had born. But my understanding is actually the soul, you can say, when the husband is actually progenating or discharging, I think that's the time when the jiva actually enters the womb of the mother, and actually from there the child kind of grows. So I think it's the father's, you can say, discharge which has the jiva, and then that goes on, and actually the baby, or you can say the jiva, is actually formed. Yeah.
Okay, then what about when we hear from the rains, right, living entities come,
yeah,
right, onto the earth?
Yeah.
Then there's the grains, then one eats the grains, and from the grains, you know, there's, you know, fat and so on and so on, and then, you know. So at that time, we also hear living entity enter. So which one is it? Is it the time of conception, right? Or is it way before that, right? Because it seems to be contradictory. And then also, if one engages, inappropriately, then also we actually, it is said that the living entities are killed for the wrong purposes, you know, like that, which are residing within our body, you know, like that.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to understand which one is it and what time exactly does the living entity enter?
Yeah, so I think Prabhuji has rightly mentioned that it says that out of thousands and thousands of drops of water, one grain is formed. And out of thousands of those grains, I think one grain might have the jiva. And when the Purusha or the man is consuming that grain, thousands of those grains, I think one jiva. But at the same time, even the example we discussed about the birth of Marudganas, because Diti had eaten, we can say, her evening supper, she hadn't washed her mouth and her hands and her feet, and she had just gone to bed in an impure manner. So that actually allowed the vrata to be broken, and that allowed Indra to actually enter her womb. And that's why he was able to actually, you know, try to attack the womb. So definitely, like when, oftentimes I've heard, and I'm exaggerating, but I've heard from devotees of some other people that we have an aura, we have an energy channel, but when people perform activities or intoxication, there are holes in that aura, there are holes in that energy channel, and that actually allows entities which are not in the right consciousness to actually enter and kind of, so people who are, sometimes they say that, oh, I got so drunk that I just forgot myself and I just started behaving like somebody else, because it says that a lot of the atmas or jivas who have left the body are still kind of hankering around, and they are still around the material realm for some time because they still have their intense desire to actually drink, eat, have sexual intercourse and stuff like that, but because their desire has been not been fulfilled, and because they don't have a cross material body. For example, if I need to speak clearly to this mic, I need my hand to actually hold the mic and bring it closer. But if I have a subtle body and I can't actually hold the mic any longer, so even though the desire might be there, but I might just be hanging around trying to speak, trying to bring the mic closer to my body, but I won't be able to do. So it says that when people are actually acting in a wrong way, it actually creates holes in the aura and the energy channel, and that allows subtle living entities to actually enter. So yes, definitely, I think that's also a point to consider. But I think the origin of if somebody is performing the Garbhodhana Sanskara properly, then at the right time, from the drops of water, the grain has originated. From the grains, actually, that one drop of discharge or semen has been created, and that semen actually carries the jiva to the mother, to the womb of the mother. So that's my understanding. But I would definitely like to do more research and learn more on this topic. Okay, sorry. So the class went like really, very deep, but I hope that you have learned something from here. And thank you so much for joining in. And thank you so much for giving this opportunity to speak in front of you. Hare Krishna.